Halloween, for Harry Houdini aficionados, marks a different kind of celebration. It's the anniversary of the magician's unexpected death. He died in Detroit in 1926, and as Detroit Public Radio's Quinn Kleinfelter reports, the death of the escape artist still haunts the city.
Harry Houdini lived by the handbill and the headline. In an era of no real mass media, he gained worldwide acclaim by challenging any handcuff, any straitjacket, any jail cell to hold him, and then escaping them all. Eventually, Houdini unveiled his own seemingly impregnable traps, as was captured in a rare recording made on wax cylinders in 1914.
Ladies and gentlemen, in introducing my original invention, the water torture cell.
The water torture cell was the great Houdini's greatest challenge, a coffin-sized glass box it seemed no mere mortal could ever survive in. Courting such danger led filmmakers and authors to portray Houdini as a prima donna performer who laughed at death. That's not the man one who knew him well says she remembers.
It was 1925 and 1926, the last year of his life, and I was 17.
Houdini chose Dorothy Young from 200 Girls auditioning for a part in his traveling Broadway-style stage show. For the next year, Houdini made Young suddenly appear from the innards of an ostensibly empty, giant-sized radio set. Now she's writing a booklet called Touring with Houdini about a man Young says she only saw even become agitated once when his wife and chief assistant Bess, for a lark during the era of Prohibition, smuggled a bottle of liquor backstage.
Houdini's eyes snapped. He said, "Do you realize the terrible publicity we would have if they had found that liquor? They would have made a big deal out of it." That's the only time I ever remember him getting a little upset.
On stage, however, Houdini reveled in stretching nerves taut, particularly when the water torture cell was brought in. He would grunt theatrically as manacles were clamped on his wrists. He was hoisted by his feet above the water-filled tank and then slowly submerged head first.
Mrs. H. always stood in the wing because they had a secret code in case he couldn't get out.
Should anything go wrong when I'm locked up, one of my assistants ready to rush in order to save my life. Harry Houdini, October the 29th, 1914.
I used to join her in the wings because it was very, very exciting.
Near the end of that final year of Houdini's life, Dorothy Young left his tour to pursue a career on Broadway. She's still angered by what she heard 2 months later. Some Canadian college wrestlers had accepted one of the magician's publicity challenges, that he could absorb any blow to his muscular midsection. But Young says one wrestler landed several blows before Houdini could tense his stomach.
One time he showed me that, you know, he had a way of doing it, and to think those boys didn't give him a chance to get himself protected.
Houdini was then 52 years old and had recently broken his ankle while being lowered into the torture cell. He'd also suffered stomach pains for weeks before the college students' unanticipated punches likely ruptured his appendix. But his fame had led to a series of imitators trying to eclipse his exploits, and Houdini refused to rest or cancel a week's worth of shows already scheduled in Detroit. The last act of his life began on a small vaudeville stage, now buried a dozen feet below a modern bandstand, at a theater still called The Majestic. Manager Joe Zania believes on that stage, inside the torture cell, Houdini's ailments finally caught up to him.
His wife ordered this tank broken open, and he was taken to Grace Hospital, which is about maybe 300 feet behind us. It's long gone now. He died into the following Saturday night, and it was Halloween night, 1926. So there's a little bit of spookiness in this building.
The precise circumstances of Houdini's collapse have become muddied by myth, but no one disputes the location of Houdini's final resting place in Detroit.
This is the room where it says private. Houdini was laid out here by the Hamilton Funeral Home in this room here.
The funeral home is now an art school run by Juanita Hammond, but she says the students are well aware of the building's history.
something. I'm not going back to the kitchen because I might see Houdini. I was in the school by myself, and the door just went back and forth, and I didn't move. I just looked back, and I said, oh, that must be Houdini, because no one was in the school but me.
Houdini often scoffed at the notion that bumps in the night were made by the dearly departed. Though he briefly told fortunes himself, Houdini spent the latter part of his life exposing frauds who claimed they could contact the dead. Yet Houdini's wife Bess tried to contact him for a decade after his death, and some legends whisper might have secretly succeeded. What is certain is that by 1936, in a prepared statement carried worldwide, Bess Houdini officially gave up the ghost.
And you remember what he always said about these things? That it was impossible for the dead to return. This proves he was right. For if it would have been possible, I would have had some sign from him in the past 10 years.
With that, Bess Houdini blew out a candle lighting her last seance and said goodbye to Harry. But nearly 80 years after his death, the mere mention of the name Houdini still conjures images of the mysterious and the supernatural. Houdini, the master of suspense, probably would have enjoyed that. For NPR News, I'm Quinn Kleinfelter in Detroit.
That's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jennifer Ludden.